This is a special branded episode from our sponsor, Citi.
There's a revolution underway in finance, a revolution in sustainable investing. The world's biggest banks are now pouring hundreds of billions of dollars into clean technologies like wind, solar efficiency, green buildings, and electric cars.
It used to be something that you had to explain to people and educate people a lot about why you were doing it and why it was important. And now it's become a distinguishing competitive characteristic among financial institutions.
That's Ed Schuyler, the Executive Vice President for Global Public Affairs at Citi. 5 years ago, Citi unveiled a $100 billion commitment to environmental finance. And thanks to strong market demand, it will surpass that goal nearly 5 years early.
A couple things changed. One is everybody started focusing on it. And two is the client demand really picked up. One of the reasons we're able to get to $95.5 billion is because the client demand is there for sustainable transportation, for clean water, for green buildings, sustainable energy projects. And what has fueled it, in a sense, has been the client demand for to do these transactions, which has increased much sharper than we had forecast.
In the U.S., clean energy technologies are worth $238 billion in yearly revenue. That is nearly the size of the country's aerospace industry. According to the Department of Energy, there are now over 3 million Americans working in renewables, natural gas, efficiency, and alternative vehicles. And all that activity is being spurred by banks like Citi, which is putting money to work for the cleaner industries of tomorrow.
These are real projects that are very easy to talk about. People understand them. We're financing the largest wind farm in the world in the North Sea. It's going to power 1 million homes in the UK. The first 200,000 went online a couple of months ago. These are real transactions that are lowering people's energy bills, and it makes good business sense as well. And that's what, you know, we need to focus on as a company, or what are the transactions that we enter into that resonate with people.
These aren't just feel-good investments. They're a mainstream asset class for America's biggest companies, and they're ensuring that the U.S. stays a leader on climate change, despite the lack of action in Washington. I'm Carol Zimmer. In this special episode of Global Translations, a branded episode by Citi, we're looking at how local governments and leading companies are working to solve the world's biggest environmental challenge. We'll have a conversation with three leading figures who are working on this issue: Ed Schuyler of Citi, former New York City Mayor Mike Bloomberg, and Carl Pope, the former executive director of the Sierra Club. They'll describe why, despite political gridlock on the issue in Washington, America is still an important player on climate change. Last fall, Mike Bloomberg took the stage at a conference called the Global Climate Action Summit, an event he put together with former California Governor Jerry Brown. Standing before a conference hall packed with high-profile executives, politicians, and environmental organizers, Bloomberg lamented America's departure from the Paris Climate Agreement. And then he issued a simple, hopeful message intended not just for the people in the room, but for the entire world. And thus, the phrase, "we are still in," became the mantra for climate action in the U.S.
When Trump said he was going to pull out, I called Jerry Brown and said, why don't we together get lots of private sector institutions and some local governments to pull together and to say, we are not going to drop out. Trump can pull us out legally from the agreement, but we can, as Americans, still do the things that are necessary to help save the planet, to do our part.
It wasn't just a messaging opportunity. It created real action. As part of the We Are Still In campaign,
3,500 cities, states, churches, and universities around the U.S. committed to the Paris climate goals. Mike Bloomberg himself plans to spend $500 million to help replace coal power plants with renewable energy. And the world's top companies, tech firms, industrial giants, and large banks threw their support behind the effort. That included Citi, which argued in a letter to the president that climate action is good business. Collectively, these commitments are keeping America at the negotiating table on climate, says Carl Pope, the former executive director of the Sierra Club.
When we were able to say more than half of the population of the United States lives in cities or states that have formally committed to meet their Paris obligations, and that we were able to show that they were actually already taking the actions which were required, sourcing renewable power, improving the efficiency of buildings, as Philadelphia did, going all solar, as Georgetown, Texas did. If we could show those actions, it not only reassured them about the United States, it raised their own ambition. It made them want to do more.
The story around climate change is often one of doom and gloom. It's about crisis. It's about political inaction. But this is a decidedly more optimistic version. There is now a critical mass of action that is solidifying America's leadership on the issue. To understand how this story is playing out, we brought Mike Bloomberg, Carl Pope, and Citi's Ed Schuyler together to discuss trends in climate policy and investment in clean technologies. So, Mike and Ed, you both have known each other quite well. Mike, in the Bloomberg administration, Ed was your deputy mayor for operations, who helped you manage a big part of your sustainability agenda. Mike, when did climate change become a priority for your administration, and how were the two of you thinking through this?
Well, I think it's fair to say when we started, it was not a big issue. If you'd asked us, was something happening, we probably would have said yes, but it was not at the top of anybody's agenda. Over a period of time, it just became more and more obvious that the world is changing very rapidly. All you got to do is look at the television to see the fires and the floods. You got to read about people getting killed when hurricanes grow more severe and hit more frequently. I thought the Secretary General said it very well the other day. This world is changing, and we don't have any time to stop and to ponder and to discuss. We need action now.
So I remember back in 2007, we did a series of briefings where brought in different people to talk about how New York City, as an enterprise and as a geographic, you know, part of the country, how it was affected by climate change and the things the city should be doing to combat it. And the overall purpose of it was to reduce the city's greenhouse gas emissions by 30% by 2030. And within that, there was, I think, 123 different initiatives. It was everything about how we that New York City dealt with its garbage to what the city's fleet looked like, which at that point was essentially all gas-powered. And I think that program, which Mike then built upon throughout his mayoralty, put it on the front burner of something that cities should be working on, and cities should be taking ownership and shouldn't just be delegated to either the federal government or the UN or NGOs. It was something that you could deal with on a concrete level. And secondly, Mike framed it in a way that said, listen, it's not just good for the environment, it's good for dollars and cents. When you change a light setting in a conference room so it goes off after a half hour, that's saving the taxpayers money. So it wasn't just like, oh, we want to be green, environmentally friendly. It was like, this is good for the city's bottom line. And I thought, you know, Mike, bringing his experience not only at that point as an elected official, but as a business leader, had a lot of credibility to fighting climate change, and it's something that his successors tried to build on.
You know, when you look at the scope of climate change and what all of us here have been talking about and other environmental challenges, I think it makes a lot of people scared, anxious. But I think all of you are saying that we should be leading with a sense of optimism about the solutions. I'm wondering what the case for optimism is here.
You've got to differentiate between what people say and people do. Texas and Oklahoma, if I remember correctly, both sent former governors or senators to be cabinet officers in the Trump administration to tear down all of the progress we've made in fighting climate change. And yet those two states are leading the way in using solar and wind. You go to Iowa. A mixed state now, a third of all of their energy comes from renewables. So what you say and what you do may very well be different things. I think for an awful lot of people, because going green, if however you want to express it, is good for the bottom line.
Well, I think one of the things we have to recognize is that the way we're solving this problem is with innovations, by doing things in new ways with new stuff and new technologies. And the thing that a lot of people in Washington don't seem to get is that innovation moves faster if you do more of it. The reason that solar panels are so cheap is because we built a lot and the Chinese built a lot. The reason that batteries have come down in price so much is, frankly, that we're all carrying them around in our cell phones, and that's enabled us to have cheaper electric cars. There's a whole innovation revolution which the United States largely invented the technologies. There's a major public utility in northern Indiana which just looked at its coal fleet, which only 3 years ago it looked at and said, okay, we're going to keep half of it because half of it makes economic sense. 3 years later, they looked at it and said, none of it makes any sense. We're going to shut it all down. And we're not even going to replace it with another fossil fuel. We're not going to replace it with natural gas. We're going to replace it with wind and solar. And that's happening all over the world. Right now, wind power and solar power in countries with good locations is providing the cheapest electricity the world has ever known. And it's just going to keep getting cheaper. And that makes me optimistic.
And big banks are, you know, seeing all of this as a business opportunity. They're putting in hundreds of billions of dollars into projects that will help the climate or help defer climate change. I think a lot of people would be surprised about that.
These are transactions that make good business sense. You can earn a good return on them and help, you know, protect the environment at the same time. And there is a whole energy finance unit in the bank. It's a global unit that is looking at these transactions all the time, and as well as our own advisory work we do, you know, for our clients that want to come talk to us, as well as investors. One of the realities of having a large multinational public company is you have shareholders, investors that want to know what your position is on these issues. And a lot of them are very aggressive. And they might, you know, it might be letter writing. It might be showing up at your annual meeting and asking the chairman and the CEO of the company, you know, why you finance certain transactions or where, you know, you are as far as your own practices. So it's not all, you know, there's a significant part of society from both the shareholder perspective or the NGO perspective that holds companies like mine accountable.
So if you want to invest in, let's say, a bank, you can look at each of the large banks and see what their environmental footprint is on a comparable basis. And if that influences your appetite to buy their stock, the company will benefit from that. And for companies, their employees want to work for a more environmentally friendly company. When we recruit, we always say, go to work for somebody else. You're going to make a bunch of stockholders wealthier. Go to work for Bloomberg, and all the profits that are generated by your work will go to the foundation. And we're working on malaria and maternal health care and all of those kinds of things. The customers, people want to buy at from organizations that they respect. So if a drugstore, CVS, is a real leader, they dropped selling cigarettes and their business improved. It's interesting because they replaced the plate, the things on the shelf where the cigarettes were, with something else, and they actually sold more of that. So it was a big win for them, bottom line and customer satisfaction. And then when a big institution comes into Citibank and wants to know what the next quarter earnings are going to be, they will say, but first, tell us what you're doing on ESG issues, particularly climate. And we're going to make decisions on whether or not we're increasing or decreasing our investment in you based on that. In some companies, they say, I don't want you to work on other things. Just work on the bottom line. Distribute the money to the shareholders. They'll make decisions on what they do with it. You can make that case. But I think this has gone beyond that. Today, the pressure on the big institutions, particularly visible institutions like banks, is to be environmentally responsive. Carl?
It's translated another way, too. Even when people will invest, they're increasingly saying, wait a minute, if you're a coal companies haven't been doing very well lately. You got to pay me a much higher rate of return to invest in your project than if I was investing in a solar project. The same thing is beginning to happen now to these very expensive long-range oil developments in remote places like the Arctic. There are still investors who will invest, but even those investors who still will are asking for a higher hurdle rate, and that's going to dramatically change the economics of clean energy going forward.
Yeah, we're living in a time where institutions are not as trusted or respected as they were. And you know, Edelman puts out a report called the Trust Barometer every year. It shows that less than half the people expect essentially their government to do the right thing. They don't trust their government. However, you ask people about the companies they work at, not just the private sector, but the companies they work at, 70% of them trust their company is going to do the right thing. 70% of them expect their CEOs to provide solutions to challenges. So while there's been this declining faith that government can take actions to solve problems, there is this increasing demand and accountability for companies to lead and come up with solutions. And I think that trend is only going to accelerate with time.
Ed, what are responsible banking principles, and how do you integrate them into the investments that Citi makes in this area?
Well, one of the things that we announced recently is we became the first U.S. bank to endorse the Principles for Responsible Banking. And this is an initiative run by the United Nations and their Environmental Program Finance Initiative. And in there, they actually outline what the principles are. And one of them, importantly, is the principles that they require any signatory to endorse are the UN Sustainable Development Goals, which were publicized first about 10 years ago. And Citi actually tracks its own business operations and client facilitation against the different sustainable development goals. It could be things like clean water, infrastructure, housing, gender equity, and we report how our work is furthering those. It's almost saying you can't be responsible if you are not supporting the sustainability principles.
Mike, you ran a city, you run a major corporation. Why do cities and businesses have a mutual interest in finding solutions for climate change? And I'm wondering what you think the economic and societal risks are to inaction.
Look, fundamentally, cities, the government does the things that the people care about. They provide police and education and sanitation and fire and social services. Those are the things that everybody deals with government every day. Federal level, you may deal with how you negotiate with North Korea, but in a day in and day out world, that's not where people are. So they want the local government who they can walk up to on the street. You know, you don't walk up to the President of the United States or the governor and say, let me tell you what my problem is. You can do it to the mayor. And the smaller cities, it is a very retail business.
When we were in City Hall, he used to say, in God we trust, everybody else bring data. And there were meetings where we looked at either crime or public health issues. And when you'd look at a map of the city, and there was this, this moment that resonated with me back in probably 2002, which is that there was one issue we were looking at, and it was the same neighborhoods that had the problem. And then there was another issue we were looking at, and it was the same neighborhoods. And somebody said, the issue will change, but the map stays the same. That's not the case, with climate and environmental issues. When you had Sandy, it was the whole city. And other issues affect everybody equally. A matter of fact, when you look at air quality issues in places like New York City, the map is actually reversed because so much of the emissions are from office buildings in Midtown that you are likely to have lower air quality in Midtown than you are in parts of the city that have other, you know, other issues to contend with. So there is something about it that it is everybody's problem. In a way that if you're trying to, you know, you can talk yourself out of anything, whether, well, I don't have children, so I don't care about public education. I walk to work, so I don't care about mass transit. There's no excuse on the environment and climate. It affects everybody.
Well, given the enormity of the whole issue, I'm going to ask this again, and I'm wondering how you stay optimistic about this, because it is a big problem, a global problem, and cities and states and the private sector can do play a role, but it's a global problem as well.
We have very cheap solar electricity now. We don't have that because any one country did something wonderful. The technology was invented in the United States. It was commercialized in Germany. It was globalized in China. And now it's being deployed in places like India and Mexico and Morocco at unbelievably low prices because everybody did a piece. So what the United States is doing, or what American cities and companies and states are doing, by doing the kind of innovation that Mike is going to support with Beyond Carbon, is not just going to benefit the emissions from the United States. We're going to be developing policies and technologies that will be copied all over the world. So we are all globally, as Mike said, in this together, and we have to solve it as if we were in it together.
There's always a reason to be optimistic. The good thing also is the federal government isn't all that important in the battle against climate change. It is individuals who control what goes on in their house. It is employers who control what goes on in their company, how they use or generate a power. So those things are going along. The environmental regulations that they put in, even when they walk away from them, a lot of companies will follow them anyways. They don't want to be sued down the road. And incidentally, it's their kids and grandkids they're worried about, so they stay the course. So there's a lot of reasons to, I don't know, the optimism is quite the ways to phrase it. I would phrase it, not, don't be pessimistic. Just go out and fix it and do it.
Yeah, I think Mike raised a great point about purchasing power and how that can change behavior. There are innovative companies that are actually trying to make things more sustainability because there's a profit margin in it for them. For example, you know, one of the ways life has changed in the last 5 years is things, people's expectations of things are going to be delivered to your house either same day or next day. That creates a lot of boxes, a lot of waste. And there are companies that are right now are hard at work. Let me try to figure out packaging that's reusable. And so there's business opportunities in here as well, which I think is one of the reasons that, you know, Mike as an entrepreneur has that optimism. You know, there's problems that are going to be solved. They might be solved because of altruism. That might be solved because it's in somebody's financial interest because they see an opportunity.
Ed Schuyler is the Executive Vice President for Global Public Affairs at Citi. Mike Bloomberg is the former mayor of New York City. And Carl Pope is the former Executive Director of the Sierra Club. You've been listening to a special branded episode of Global Translations, brought to you by Citi. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Carol Zimmer.
This special episode of Global Translations is brand content paid for by Citi, a leading global bank, and produced in conjunction with Politico's brand studio, Politico Focus. Politico's editorial team was not involved in the production of this episode.